for coming to the morning talk after the banquet. And I also want to thank organizers for inviting me to give a talk in this conference. And it's always been a pleasure to be in Perimeter, which is an extremely motivating place. It starts motivating people right in front of the door. And this time in my visit, Daniel told me that it's indeed this Greek sentence means that let no one uninterested in geometry enter here. And later, I will try to modify this sentence a little bit, putting something else here. So this is a still unpublished joint work with Michael Walter and Dominic, who is also in the conference. So the bulk of the talk will be about this unpublished work, but from time to time, we will see some results from other three works as well. So the three kind of people may be interested in this talk. One is a topologist. They try to classify manifolds. Like given two manifolds, like M1 and M2, the question is that whether we can continuously deform M1, the manifold M1 to the manifold M2. If this is the case, we say that they have same topologies. If this is not the case, we say that they have different topologies. And a low or a high energy physicist may be interested in the talk. One of the big problems there is to classify the phases of quantum systems. And the problem is roughly as follows. You are given two Hamiltonians, H1 and H2. And you can deform these two Hamiltonians, like H1 to H1 prime and H2 to H2 prime, and families of other Hamiltonians. And you say that H1 is in the same phase as in the H1 prime if there is no drastic change in the physical observables during this deformation. But maybe these two Hamiltonians are not deformable to each other continuously, which means that you can actually understand, there are some physical observables that distinguishes these two theories. And in that case, you say that H1 and H2 are in different phases. In the past, until 1990s, 1995s, so on, there has been a lot of work at the intersection of these two fields. And towards the end of the century, Kitai realized that these problems here and these methods here can indeed be extremely useful for the purposes of quantum information theorists or for those people who want to build a quantum memory. What he did is basically to come up with a physical system which is robust to local noise so that you can put code words on the systems and it's inherently an error-correcting code. Now let's look through the outline. So I will continue with more motivations about phases of quantum matter and quantum error correction. Although Davide did a great job here, I will just go through some of the basic pieces. And then I'm going to give basics about tensor networks and topological quantum field theories, since the whole talk is about connecting these two. And then we will see that these state-time TQFTs can naturally be seen as in the language of tensor networks. So we will look at numbers, states, operators, and so on. And then we will completely forget about TQFTs, and we will introduce a general tensor network framework for topological order. And these TQFTs, these state-time TQFTs, are RG fixed points. But indeed, if you want to go away from RG fixed points, this general framework that we introduce seems promising. And then we will see some examples called Dijkgraaf-Witten models, 2 plus 1D Levin-Wendt models corresponding to Turaya-Vieto TQFTs, 3 plus 1D Volker-Wang models correspond to Krein-Yetter TQFTs. And then I'm planning to finish with some problems from physics and from quantum information. Right. So until 1980s, people already had solid understanding for classical thermal phases. Like we have solids, liquids, and so on. We also understood how to classify quantum phases at zero temperature with local order parameters. And the framework that's to understand all these things is called Landau's spontaneous symmetry breaking. But then people realized that there may be systems which has no local order parameters, but they have non-local order parameters. And this whole framework or this whole field of study has been called topological order. And then with the advancement in quantum information theory, people started to look at the problem of classifying phases from a computational point of view. We basically have a Mani Bedu system on a lattice. At each side on the lattice, we have a local degree of freedom that can take d values. Say it lives in CD. We have a local Hamiltonian, which is a sum of local terms, hi. Hi means that there's an operator, there's a Hermitian operator that acts on this region I, this geometrical local region I, and we want to understand the ground states of these operators. And these states are may in general be extremely complicated since it lives in this big Hilbert space CD tensor N. And we also assume some gap promise. So there is a gap between the ground state and the first excited state of this Hamiltonian. The first example of a quantum state from this point of view is the trivial phase. It's the product state, which is basically, we say that this psi n, the ground state, is a product of local states. So it's at each side we assign phi. This whole state is phi tensor n. And it's the ground state of a very natural Hamiltonian, which is this projector. So after introducing the trivial phase, we want to understand some kind of equivalence relation so that we can talk about classifying phases. And the equivalence relation, one of the equivalence relations that David also introduced, is gap-preserving local unitaries. So this Hamiltonian H and H prime is called equivalence. It's called to be in the same phase if there exists a gap-preserving local unitary U such that H prime is equal to H but conjugated by U. So it's pretty reasonable because this gap-preserving local unitaries preserve the expectation values of the correlation functions. So there's no drastic change. If there's a connection between H and H prime in this way, there's no drastic change in the expectation values of the physical observables. So this equivalence relation, so say we wrote down every possible local Hamiltonian that we can write down, and this equivalence relation basically divides the set of Hamiltonians into islands, into pieces. This is called theory T1 or phase T1, T2, T3, and so on. And the problem is really to list all these phases and, if possible, to come up with a scheme that basically classifies all these phases. And if you introduce a symmetry, this phase diagram enriches. So this island divides into sub-islands and so on. So another motivation to work topological order comes from quantum error correction, which I really find extremely fundamental, because things that are persistent in nature must be somehow robust against errors and local noise. We can give many examples, like languages are kind of error correcting codes. The classical hard disks that we use in computers are error correcting codes. And people are trying to build quantum hard disks or quantum memories. And this is where one of the insights of Kitaev comes in. He basically says that we can devise some local Hamiltonians such that we can see its ground state space as the code space, which is robust, which is protected against local noise and Hamiltonian perturbations. Yeah, people have already gone through this example, so I'm not going to explain, but I want to emphasize one point. So if you put this Hamiltonian on the torus, you basically have four ground states. And these four ground states look completely the same if you look at them locally. So imagine that I give you this system, and I didn't tell you which ground state I give you. I don't allow you to access the whole system, but I allow you to access some local part of this system. There is no way for you to tell me which ground state I give you. And this is why, intuitively, this local indistinguishability is connected to the robustness against local noise. Since you can argue intuitively that the probability that the local noise will switch you from one of these ground states to another ground state decays exponentially with the system size n. Right. So let's start with some basics of tensor networks, which we already saw on Tuesday. Right. So in principle, you just have a network. You can draw any network that you want. And you put a tensor at each node of this network. You have degrees of freedoms at the edges of this network. And these contracted edges, so for example, this gives you a matrix product state. At each node, you have a matrix A. This AI alpha beta, it's a C number. The contracted edges of the network, you contract the indices, but the uncontracted ones goes to the description of the state. You can generalize it easily to two dimensions, three dimensions, and higher dimensions as well. And these kind of states are taught that they're suitable to describe or approximate the ground states of gapped Hamiltonians, local gapped Hamiltonians. And there's another type of tensor network, which basically allows you to renormalize, to do renormalization transformations. It's called MIRA. You basically coarse grain your state, coarse grain your lattice, and this induces some transformations on the state and the Hamiltonian by these local tensors. So now let's start from the beginning again. Let's write down some tensor networks in 2D. So let's first describe the trivial phase, right? We should be able to describe the product state with tensor networks. It's basically assigning a maximally entangled state between each side of the lattice. So this line should mean that I have this a degree of freedom here and a degree of freedom here, and they're maximally entangled. And this whole state, psi prime, is omega tensor 2n. So it's a product state. We already saw that there is a Hamiltonian, there is an operator, local operator, gapped local operator, such that this psi prime is the ground state of this h prime. So that's great. We can describe the trivial phase with tensor networks, but it's not that interesting. So let's make things more interesting by introducing some linear maps, a linear map A, at every node of the lattice. And it maps these virtual degrees of freedoms to the physical degree of freedom. So now the new state that we get psi is described as this operation. And one can find the local frustration-free Hamiltonian H by using H prime and A, such that this psi is the ground state of this this Hamiltonian H. To me, for obvious reasons, this Hilbert space we call virtual space, and this we call physical space, since we don't have access to this virtual space, but we only observe this physical space. And this is the notation that I'm going to use. Whenever we draw a network, whenever we see a network, we put a tensor at each node that takes values on the degrees of freedoms next to this vertex. So if I summarize this this brief summary of tensor networks, basically we saw that there are virtual spaces and physical Hilbert spaces, and the structure of the whole state is encoded in a local tensor A, And it's actually the reverse direction that we got used to, at least in undergrad studies. Normally, we are given a local Hamiltonian, and we try to find the eigenstate of this Hamiltonian. But here, it's the reverse. We start from a local tensor A. This gives us a state. And from the state, there is a natural local frustration-free Hamiltonian, such that this is the ground state of this local Hamiltonian. Right, so this is why people think that it's maybe a good ansatz for describing ground states of Hamiltonians. Because given a local tensor, you'd at least know that it's a ground state of a local and frustration-free Hamiltonian. So let's go the other way around, not from tensor to Hamiltonian, but let's go from Hamiltonian to the state. Say we are given a local Hamiltonian H, and we want to find the ground state. We can't do it exactly, but maybe we can do it approximately. And the tool that we use to approximate the ground state is to look at this operator e to the minus hd, which is sometimes called Euclidean path integral or imaginary time evolution. So you discretize this operator. You write it as a tensor network. Whatever you input here, let's input a product state. On the output, you will get a ground state, or you will get an approximation to the ground state. And if this Hamiltonian is gapped, you can do this. You can get a good approximation of the ground state by a constant depth of circuit. And how to get the states in terms of a tensor network state. So this is already in tensor network form. But just to see it in its own dimension, we compress this imaginary time evolution to one less dimension, and we get a tensor network state. And in this picture, it's a 1 plus 1D system. So we get an MPS at the output of this Euclidean path integral. So this is another reason why people think that tensor network states should be able to approximate the ground states of local gapped Hamiltonians. So let me just overview how a tensor network person live his daily life. We basically see the ground states of many body lattice systems as tensor network states for the reasons that I already gave. And we find, so there is a physical phenomena that we want to explain. And we basically try to find conditions on the local tensors. In the best case, if possible, these are if and only if conditions, such that this tensor network state gives us the required physical properties that we want to explain. And in this talk, we will see how to axiomatize the conditions on the local tensors, such that the ground state space is topologically ordered, which sometimes simply means that there are some physical properties depending on the topology of the manifold. And we will also see TQFTs. The state-sum TQFTs will appear as fixed points. We can derive tensor networks and Hamiltonians for these. So let's quickly go over state-sum TQFTs. So as I said, the ultimate goal, which is unfortunately formidable, is to assign numbers to n plus 1 dimensional manifolds in such a way that this assignment z, so zm is, if m is not topologically equivalent to n, m is not topologically equivalent to n if and only if this assignment gives different numbers for manifolds m and n. We can't do this, but at least we can come up with a scheme z such that if m is topologically equivalent to n, you may come up with a scheme z such that zm is equal to zn. And one way to do this is called state sum construction. We first triangulate the manifold m by gluing m plus 1 simplices. We put degrees of freedoms on 0, 1, up to n simplices. And then we assign a tensor T to every m plus 1 simplex. And we obtain this number that we want to get by contracting these tensors, which corresponds to gluing m plus 1 simplices. So as has already been emphasized in Davide's talk, this T, this tensor T, like this set M, the number that we give to the manifold, should be independent of the triangulation because it's the same manifold. And we can ensure that ZM is retriangulation invariant if this T satisfies some equations called Pachner equations, which can be ensured locally. So yeah, let's go over some pictures. Zero simplex is a point, one simplex is a line, two simplex is a triangle, three simplex is a tetrahedron, and so on. And let's see how we simply do the contractions. So I'm going to give examples in 1 plus 1D, but you should imagine all these things in n plus 1 dimensions. So here we assign degrees of freedoms on the edges, like I, J, K. And we assign the tensor T to the two simplex. And when we glue these two simplices along this edge, we basically make K to be equal to L, and we sum over K. So we contract over the degrees of freedoms that are glued. A retriangulation invariance is expressed in these kind of equations. Gluing these two simplices is equivalent to gluing these two simplices, and in tensor notation, it just implies this equation. And similarly, there's this 3 to 1 Pachner equation that has to be satisfied by T, such that the state sum construction gives us a topological invariant of the m plus 1 manifold. Okay, let's go over what we talked about. And n plus 1 state sum QKFT uses this local data T to assign a number to the closed n plus 1 manifold. It assigns a vector to the n plus 1 manifold M with closed n manifold such that n is the boundary of M. And this lives in this vector space that's assigned to n manifold, closed n manifold. And to the cylinder, we assign a linear map from degrees of freedom on the bottom to the degrees of freedom on the top. And retriangulation invariance means that this cylinder map is a projector. Right. So what am I doing in terms of the time? Great. Right, so we saw tensor networks, we saw state sum TQFTs, and we also saw that state sum TQFTs are natural tensor networks. Now let's try to write down some local gapped Hamiltonians, local Hamiltonians, and associate the states implied by these TQFTs to the ground states of these Hamiltonians. Again, I'm going to do everything in 1 plus 1D. Given a state sum TQFT in 1 plus 1D, which means that we are given a tensor T satisfying Pachner equations, we can define a many-body Hamiltonian in this way. It's a sum over local terms. And this HV, this local Hamiltonian term, is defined as follows. It acts on the degrees of freedoms that's connected to this vertex V. So in this example, we have degrees of freedoms on the edges, I and J. One should see this as an operator from these black degrees of freedoms from I and J to I prime and J prime. And you compute its matrix elements as the contraction of these two simplex tensors along the edge S. Now we can show that Hamiltonian defined in this way is a commuting Hamiltonian. So HV acting on vertex V commutes with HV prime, which is proven in this way. So here we first apply HV and then HV prime. But on the right-hand side, we first apply HV prime and then HV. This operator is equal to this operator by retriangulation invariance, because from here to here, we only flip this edge to this edge. And it's also a projector. If we apply this Hamiltonian term, this local Hamiltonian term, twice, it's equal to applying it once, again, by retriangulation invariance. So now how to find the ground states of this Hamiltonian? It must be easy, because it's a projector, and it's commuting. So we just have to look at the image of the product of these local Hamiltonian terms, which is basically this operator, which is nothing but the cylinder map, or the cylinder projector that's already introduced in state-time TQFTs. So you should see this part of, you should see these degrees of freedoms as the input of this operator, and these degrees of freedoms as the output. And again, it's by retriangulation invariance that applying this operator twice is equal to applying it once. So it's a projector. And it's a projector onto the ground state space, because this operator is nothing but the products of these local Hamiltonian terms. So this, we already know that this is a ground state projector. So we can just input any state that we want in product state. And as the input and on the output, we find one of the ground states. And we can express this. This is already in tensor network form. But if you want this to seem to look as a regular MPS, you just have to press this thing into one dimension, into one less dimension, and then go to dual lattice. So this is nothing but the usual MPS form that we have already seen. So we can also switch between the ground states of the same Hamiltonian on finer and coarser lattices by the cylinder isometry map. So what we do is that we have closed N manifold N, and we triangulate it in a finer way than another triangulation, in a coarser way. And we just put these on top of each other and fill between with N plus 1 simplices. And this operator from here to here, we can call coarse graining. From here to, from top to bottom, we can call it fine graining, which already has this other tensor network that we introduced. It has mirror structure. And this is an isometry, since so mapping ground state space from finer triangulation to coarser and back to the finer is equal to the cylinder map on the finer triangulation and on the other way for the coarse lattice. Right. So now we already saw that these kind of TQFTs are naturally expressed as tensor networks, but maybe there is a more general framework that we can use to describe tensor networks, such that we are allowed to go away from RG fixed points, which may allow us to study phase transitions using tensor network methods. Now let's introduce that. So we basically use tensor network operators. Let's start from 2 plus 1D. This is the local tensor that describes our state. These red degrees of freedoms are the virtual degrees of freedom of the state, and this black is the physical degree of freedom. And locally, we invert this tensor A, and we say that it's not injective on the virtual degrees of freedom, but it's only supported on some subspace of these virtual degrees of freedoms. And we say that, let's say this virtual subspace on which this local tensor is supported is expressible in terms of a matrix product operator. And then we also introduce another property that we call pulling through, which is inspired by deformable Wilson loops. We say that this very same matrix product operator, which can be seen as a line operator on the virtual indices, can be deformable through the local tensor A. So this tensor network is equal to this tensor network. And in that way, we can mimic the behavior of deformable Wilson loops on the virtual level. This is the picture in 2+1 dimensions. We can draw similar pictures in higher dimensions as well. So let's do it in 3+1 dimensions. This is our local tensor in that describes our three-dimensional ground state. And now we invert it. But now, instead of a loop operator, we find a surface operator that's supported on a sphere. Now, this surface operator should be deformable through the local tensor A. So here you have your local tensor A. Here you have your surface operator. From left to right hand side, we deform it. We pull it through the local tensor A. We obtain another surface operator on the other side of the local tensor. Provided these properties, you can show that you can get topologically ordered ground states. These don't necessarily imply that you have topological order, but all the topological order states that we know is a special case of these kind of axioms in terms of tensor networks. Now let's again see how these state-time TQFDs are special case of this general framework. So basically, what we see is that this local tensor, this tensor network injectivity condition, is equivalent to Pachner equation if all these tensors A star and these T's equal to the simplex tensor that we assign to the tree simplex. And here, in the same way as well, this pulling through equation, the condition that we can deform these matrix product operators is equivalent to, again, this Pachner equation. Indeed, if you actually look at it a little bit more carefully, you can realize that this equation is nothing but the dual of this equation. So if you draw this equation in a dual lattice, you get these equations. It goes in the same way for 3+1 dimensions and so on. So here our tensor network operator injectivity and pulling three condition corresponds to 2-4 Pachner equation. Here this picture corresponds to 2-4 Pachner equation. Another type of pulling through that you pull two tensors on left-hand side to the other two tensors on the right-hand side corresponds to 3-3 Pachner equation. Now let's see some examples. Dijkgraaf-Witten models in n+1 dimensions. As input, we have a finite group. We have local degrees of freedoms as the elements of this group, which are attached on one simplices. And to the n+1 simplex, we assign n plus one cocycle. And we can construct the Hamiltonian and also the ground states for these models. So let's give an example for n is equal to 2. We assign 3 cocycle to the 3 simplex. And just imagine that we run through the ground state projector. What you have to do is to write down this ground state projector in 2+1D, and then you compress it down to 2 dimensions. What you get is a tensor that looks like this. So it's really the same tensor, but you compress this and then take the dual lattice. So this is a 3 cocycle. And the matrix product operator that explains the support space of this local tensor and the ones that pulls through is also the same 3 cocycle. So Levin-Wendt models also proceed in the same way. But now your input is different. You have unitary fusion tensor category. You have simple objects. you have fusion of these simple objects, and you have an associator, which is also called F symbol, or sometimes, very rarely, G symbol. And this associator satisfies this pentagon equation, which is one of those Pochner equations. Now, we do the same thing as we did in Dijkgraaf-Witte models. We attach local degrees of freedoms on the one simplices. These are simple objects in C. And we assign this F symbols to the three simplex as a result of the same procedure that I described for Dijkgraaf-Witte models in 2 plus 1D. You obtain the local tensor for the ground state description of the tensor network state. And this matrix product operator that behaves like Wilson loops on the virtual level. Now, what we did was to use this local tensor that's assigned to simplex. We found the local tensor for the ground state and the matrix product operator. This is the pulling through equation that we pull this matrix product operator through this local tensor, and we have another loop operator on the other side of the local tensor. And with some, right, so this is nothing but the pentagon equation for these specific type of tensors, for these F symbols. Now, let's give at least one example in 3 plus 1 dimensions. Its input is unitary braided fusion category. We again have simple objects. We have a fusion product. And we have braiding and also an associator. Now, this associator satisfies pentagon equation. And it satisfies hexagon equation with the braiding R symbol. Here, we basically follow what they already did. So we assign degrees of freedoms on two simplices. On four simplex, we assign something called 15J symbol, which is expressed in terms of F and R symbols. This is our local tensor. This is our tensor network operator. This is our pulling through equation. The surface operator pulled through the local tensor. And this is nothing but the 2 to 4 Pochner equation. So how many minutes do I have left? Probably not much.
15 more.
Oh, right. OK, great. Thanks. Right, so yeah, so we all talked about different approaches. One is tensor network approach, one is approach by TKFT, state sum TKFTs to find new models. So how to find a new one? A crude way is just to sit down and solve these equations. You assign degrees of freedoms to 0, 1, up to n simplices. You assign a tensor to n plus 1 simplex. These two steps are pretty easy to do, but the third step is extremely hard. You have to solve all these Pochner equations and find this tensor T to get retriangulation invariance, which gives us all nice properties of the Hamiltonians that we described out of the TKFTs. And then you just use what we saw in the past star to write down the model, tensor network ground space, tensor network operators, and so on. So Wakely, a more systematic way is to come up with an n category. You have objects, one morphisms, up to n morphisms. And you have an associator at level n plus 1. So you assign objects to 0 simplices on the lattice, one morphisms to 1 simplices on the lattice, and so on. And to the n plus 1 simplex that you use to implement this simple Euclidean path integral. You assign this tensor T. You assign associator as this tensor T. And it automatically satisfies Pochner equation. And you can again use these rules. So yeah, maybe a third way is just to try to solve these tensor equations that we have shown for tensor networks. But it's not, it's basically like this. So it's not any easier than this. So because this is just a simple case of the tensor network framework. Right. So I guess through the whole conference, at least in the talks that from which one can derive a Hamiltonian and a model, they were all like fixed points. In my brain, it was all like fixed points, fixed points, fixed points. But now, how to go away from fixed points? Say we start from a Hamiltonian, which is derived from one of these states empty QFTs, let's say. And now we perturb these Hamiltonians. We may add additional terms. We may change the coefficients of the local Hamiltonian terms. And we can get different Hamiltonians like H1, H2, H3. On the tensor network level, it indeed implies that you are deforming this local tensor T of that you use to describe your ground state. But it's unfortunately not correct in the other way around. So you really have to be careful, because a perturbation in your local tensor may imply a phase transition on the Hamiltonian level. So you really have to come up with some properties that stabilizes the map from here to here. And this we have studied in another work. But these people, there are stable and unstable tensor variations. Stable variations basically make you stay in the same phase, in the same Hamiltonian phase. And unstable variations leads you to go out of the phase, which we interpret as boson condensation. And we show that these stable variations are the ones that respect these tensor network symmetries that we introduced, these MPO symmetries, or we only did it in 2D, so those variations in 2 plus 1D are the ones that respect MPO symmetries. So why is this important? It's important because if one wants to go and study phase transitions numerically, they really have to be careful about ensuring these kind of symmetries, otherwise they're immediately out of the phase.
Along those paths, were they all fixed-point tensors?
This T? Is this, yes. T? Well, OK, if this is derived from the state-sum TQFT, this T is this tensor that we assign to the simplex.
What I mean is why would deformations of tensors behave? I mean, if you're deforming the Hamiltonian, you could also pass to a gapless phase without realizing, right? So what's, I don't understand the difference between the two sides.
Oh, right. So okay, that's correct. So exactly. So if you deform the Hamiltonian, you can also, well, if it's a gapped Hamiltonian, and don't you expect that these local perturbations, you don't close the gap?
So I think you can do small infinitesimal perturbations.
Right. Right.
And still change the phase.
Right. That's why one has to be careful to make conclusions about here by studying here, by working at that side. Right, let's talk about some problems, some questions that I would like to see to be solved. Well, of course, finding new models. But even if you find a new model, you are not really sure that it's whether it's already in the phase of a known model or not. So one has to go understand excitations, like point-like excitations, loop-like excitations, and so on. And we've already seen in Eric Rabel's talk that these kind of operations, like braiding of these excitations, can actually be seen as gates for quantum computation. I think Robert will also talk a little bit about that, probably a lot about that. So one can use this tensor network framework to study, to find out these excitations. What you have to do is to look at your tensor network by basically extracting lower dimensional manifolds to study point-like excitations in 3 plus 1D. You have to extract a sphere. And for loop-like excitations, you have to look at how to extract torus and what you assign in terms of tensors to these lower dimensional manifolds. And one can also use tensor network framework for performing or analyzing quantum error correction, because you are given a ground state, which is supposedly one of the code words. But there's always errors, there's always noise, so you will have some, you will have some noise, you will have some deformations on your ground state, which you can correct with projectors implied by these tensor network operators. So of course one has to put it in the correct framework, one has to see it as a POEM and so on, so in the quantum information language. But I guess it should be useful in that as well. And it's also useful in studying topological quantum phase transitions. So it's already been studied in like 1 or 2 years ago with simple examples, and they kind of had an interpretation of anion condensations in terms of tensor networks, and connected to the last work that I showed, one really has to be careful about how to study these phase transitions from tensor network point of view. And then the last thing that I find really fascinating has already been, to the best of my knowledge, first mentioned in work of Gukov, Kapustin, Gaiotto, and other people. So these lambda theory can be seen as a breaking, spontaneous breaking of zero-form global symmetries and topological order. Maybe we can express all of them as breaking of higher form symmetries, like symmetries on strings, surfaces, and so on. Let's summarize. So we gave a long motivation connecting quantum matter error correction. We went through basics of tensor networks and state-sum TQFTs. We showed that the state-sum TQFTs implies RG fixed-point models. Then we present a general framework to characterize topological order in terms of tensor networks. These are the two key properties. We have also seen that these RG fixed-point models are a specific case of this general tensor network framework. We went through these examples, and we finished with some open problems. Thank you for listening.
Are they also representable? I mean, if you have, let's say, a low density of excitations, are they also representable by a tensor network?
Yeah, actually, Dominic, in his slides, he showed. So that's okay. That was a work from last year. This can be done. Yeah.
So if you want to argue the tensor networks with these tensor lines are the correct way to describe topological phases, should you try to give an algorithm to, given a phase, find the internal space and the tensors?
Like, you give me a Hamiltonian?
Yeah, a phase.
Right, so that's right. So what I presented, goes in the other way, right? So it's like we take tensor networks. There's no guarantee of that. We don't know whether tensor networks can express any gapped local phase, any gapped local Hamiltonian, the ground state of any gapped local Hamiltonian. But say that we use it as an ansatz. And one way is to look at how much we can do, starting from tensor network, how many gapped phases that we can express. I completely agree that one should actually, like, another way is to start from a local, given local Hamiltonian, gapped local Hamiltonian, and try to find this ground state local tensor.
But the reason I ask the question, because you are comparing this with, say, Torrid Viro.
Yeah.
But in Torrid Viro, I do have an algorithm to get the fusion category. I take my phase of matter, I take a gap boundary condition, and I look at which anions live on the boundary, and that gives me the fusion category from which I can feed to Torrid Viro to get the phase back. So it would be nice to have a similar physical understanding of the data you want to use.
But I'm a bit confused about what you give me as an input. And so they give me a local Hamiltonian as an input, and we want to find what are these tensor network symmetries.
Yes. I
don't know a way to do that. But I agree that that's the physically relevant question. But that's not the approach that we take here.
More questions?
Yeah, it's maybe not fair to ask a question about things that's in your outlook, but nevertheless, so you have the topological, the annual condensation phase transitions, and then on the other hand, yeah, there's a separate entry, the phase transitions by symmetry breaking for symmetries that aren't localized at a point, right there on surfaces or whatever. So is it clear that these things are not the same? Or?
Sorry, I didn't get the second one. What's the second?
You had four entries, right? Higher form symmetries.
Right.
So you say, maybe we can explain all phases by higher form symmetry breaking.
Right.
But it's clear that certainly you cannot get all the phases by annual condensation. Certainly you cannot go between all phases by annual condensation. So that suggests that higher form symmetries are a stronger tool, if you like. So is it clear that these are not the same thing?
Yeah, I don't know much, actually. So.
There are some strong parallels between annual compensation and symmetry breaking, so that's why I asked.
Maybe you can comment about that, because this I took from your paper, so that part of the.
Well, the question is what you define as a symmetry, because even if your definition is lax enough, you might end up putting in all the annual theorists, but in a very artificial way. I mean, I would have, if you think about symmetry in a basic way, you know, for example, you would have something involving lines which fuse in a billion group, say, then I wouldn't think you could get all annual theorists as breaking of that symmetry definition.
Well, I guess it's maybe not the right time to ask this question, but I guess I just wondered if there's a specific example, for example, of higher form symmetry breaking where you go from a theory with a given central charge to a theory with a different central charge on symmetry breaking.
I don't think that I don't think that would happen.
So, I mean, this would be interesting to know about, but anyway. Did you say you think it will? Or
no, I don't think.
You don't think it will happen? Okay, then it sounds like the two lower entries there may actually be the same thing, potentially.
We have time.
No, I don't think.
It's interesting to think about.
Any further questions?
Do you have any ideas to describe chiral phases in this sort of systematic approach?
No. Do you?
So I asked you.
So I have one question.
Yeah.
So there's a big open question whether all gap local Hamiltonians on the ground states of them are well described by projected and linear pair states.
Yeah.
Also, there's a big question whether if you disregard symmetries and the 2D actually level when string at models label all the different topological phases that we can have. And we already know that the level when string nets and have a very efficient catch description.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
Could you say that these two questions are at least in the setting of gap flow Hamiltonians without symmetries equivalent? So the question whether for each phase there's a random string net is equivalent to saying
So you basically ask that whether all gap local Hamiltonians whether all these Lieberman string nets are one example of in all each of these islands.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you like? What's the intuition?
I mean, one has to really look at. Like I don't even know the following. It's like you start from a Lieberman model, you perturb it, and then you renormalize it back. I don't even know this actually properly flows to itself. I don't know, maybe security people knows a bit more than that, but I suspect because they only look at fixed point models, so. I mean, it strongly suggests what you said, but